Generally speaking, we avoid, as I think I said before, anything that is diminishing of ourselves. Any experience, any person, any idea that we can't receive or control or comprehend, we deny it or avoid it. We don't like things or experiences that are negative to our sense of ourselves. As, you know, obviously sometimes we can't avoid them, but when we can, we generally choose other roads. Those of us who might be what we say gravitationally challenged might avoid weighing ourselves on a scale. That would not be a positive experience. We need positive experiences. Our egos and our bodies crave that. The reason I bring that in here is that in the relationship with God, is that a positive experience or not? And it's got to be more than neutral. Neutral is lukewarm. But if it's lukewarm to cold, we avoid it. God is one of those. Love is one of those. Relationships are one of those. Things that we don't understand. See, if you don't understand something, that's a negative experience of your mind. And you say, I will be tempted then to deny that which I can't understand. If it's not understandable, there's no reality to it. Which makes mystery something to be constantly investigated as a negative reality. We'll go after it to prove it. And proof then is a triumph of our minds and senses over that which appeared to be mysterious, non-understandable. One of the hard things to understand clearly is being loved. And even beyond that is being forgiven. That is a hard thing. I'm reading a book, I think it's called The Other Side of Love, by a contemplative Catholic sister. I think her last name is Pollard. And it's a book where she takes Albert Speer, whom you might recall was Hitler's architect and the designer of things, buildings, and then the war machine, and of course the camps. And he at Nuremberg received 20 years in Spandauer prison. And it's his writings. He wrote several books, and she takes some of the things of his writing, and then she does her own commenting on it about forgiveness. It's a very good book. I've read it a couple of times to understand him and to understand what she's saying, because people criticize him. For instance, how could he not have known? And he's covering up, and it's very difficult. Say Helen Prejean, the Dead Man Walking sister who writes about forgiving, even having mercy on death row people going, being punished by death. Mercy is very hard to understand and to believe in. It's hard to believe that we could be forgiven. And it's hard for us to do the forgiving. It is made easier. We forgive when we can understand the heartfelt, with empathy, the heartfelt pathos of the person asking for forgiveness. We see their sincerity. It's proven. So we say, okay, but is our forgiveness of another predicated, or does it hang on, or is a result of how intense the person is and how deeply they grieve and express their remorse and all? We say, well, okay, I'll give you a B+ for that, and I'll forgive you. That is a good demonstration. Of course, I have to believe it, and sometimes we say, well, they were just faking, and that's what Albert Speer is accused of by some in his writings, that he really was blinded by ego ambition and did not understand the ferocity of Nazi intentions, and so he's just excusing himself or something. Well, anybody who has asked for forgiveness can be not believed. I can't understand it, so I'm not going to forgive. And of course, about ourselves, I can't understand how anybody can forgive me for something like that. And we know people and have heard of people who live with regret all their life. Some of us remember Ralph Branca. You got to be pretty old to remember Ralph Branca. But he was the Brooklyn pitcher in the playoff game that threw the Bobby Thompson home run in 1951, and oh God, it was awful. Well, there's been athletes who have missed field goals. I think there's one here in Minnesota. Even though his name is Anderson, he was a foreign agent from the state just east of here. It's really hard for us to be forgiven, and we don't understand it, so we deny it. I could not possibly forgive myself, and I could not possibly accept forgiveness because I don't understand it. And it's my lack of understanding that makes it real or unreal. I don't understand it, so it doesn't exist. Mercy does not exist because I can't forgive myself. I can't understand how to do that. And I would imagine that many of us have a problem. We can remember one thing that can define us negatively. And we say, I cannot forgive myself for that. I can't understand forgiveness. So I just don't. I put it aside. I don't go to it. I put God aside. I put relationships aside. I don't want anything to do with anything that will make me feel bad about myself. Well, that's psychologically understandable. And then we have a God that whom we can confine to the definition of forgiver. God is the forgiver. I had, back in the 70s, dinner with African-American Cajun Catholic at his home with his wife down near Lafayette, Louisiana, and Mr. Lionel. And Mr. Lionel was 100% Catholic and 120% Baptist. He loved to preach and sing, and we'd be sitting and he'd stand up and start doing his preaching, and his wife would head for the kitchen because she had heard this before. But his basic song and preaching was that if we didn't sin, God wouldn't have anything to do all day long. That was his image of God and the image of ourselves. So it was good for us to sin because then we kept God busy. That was the basic theology. And he was very sincere about it. So you can confine God to being the forgiver. Let me say something quite heretical in some regards. I would say that mercy in God is 5% forgiveness and 95% healing. Whereas you could say, no, mercy is 100% forgiving. That's all mercy is. No, I don't believe that. I don't believe it psychologically, nor spiritually, nor theological. I think Jesus was more interested in the curing for the future than recovering from the past or making payment for the past. That there was a raising, now get out of here, go. That there was every encounter with Jesus was a missioning experience. Let me say it again. Every time Jesus encountered somebody, it was ascending. It was fruitful. That intimacy, in order to be intimacy, has to be fruitful. And Jesus was very intimate in his life with us. And he says, I have come that you may have life. I am more interested in your living than in your dragging your life around like a burden. And I am healing you for a life of fruitfulness yourself. You are the fruitful result of my meeting you, but the others to whom you will go as a healed person, their lives are fruitful because of you. So fruitfulness is everything. So healing is more important in our experience with Jesus, as the Pope Francis calls Jesus the face of mercy. Mercy is not just forgiving. That's, we got to get that straight. Now that is difficult to believe and difficult to understand for the reasons I was saying. It's hard to believe that God can forgive us. It's hard for me to forgive myself, and so I give it all up. I don't bother with it. Living with ourselves, then, is a holy experience. Living with ourselves is a constant recovery, because we injure ourselves. Almost every experience of limitations is an injury to our ego. And we are recovering from how we are a disappointment to ourselves and to others. We constantly are encouraged by grace to rise, to show up, to display, to bring about fruitfulness. So that every encounter that Jesus had with us in the Gospels, every encounter that he has is a mission experience. Not a judicial, not just a healing. It's a healing from, but the important thing is a healing for. It's the beyond, it's the next. Go get them. Jesus never healed someone or fed someone or taught someone and said, good, now you just stay right there. You're okay right there, just stay right there. Just stay in your paralysis, in your self-diminishment. No, it's much more the woman whom he met at the well, all the people whom Jesus, it's always, you have my future in you. Now go and live it, and go and be to others as I am to you. Healing, enlivening, creative. That the lives we have been given are lives we are to give. We extend them in various ways. We extend the gifts that God has given us, including life, including healing. We are meant to be that for others. That's so central to what we call in the Catholic Church the sacramental system. So sacraments are gestures and words. They have to go together, as you know. It's not just words, it's not just gestures. Why? Because that's who we are. We are word gesture people. We give gifts with notes. We shake hands and we say something. They go together. That's just psychological. Now one interesting thing about psychological health, gestures, when offered by a healthy person, the health is revealed by the harmony of the gesture with the interior. Okay, I know that's confusing. That the gestures are consistent, maybe that's a better way. That my psychological health is that who I am is pretty, you know, one standard deviation, perhaps, they're pretty the same. I'm not a person who is injured psychologically or emotionally. Their gestures are not harmonious with their interior. That quickly, radically changes. And so it's difficult to understand those people because they're injured. But the healthier you are, the more harmony there is between the interior and the exterior. I'll just say that simply. Then God is healthiest of all, because the interior of God is Jesus expressed, the sacrament. Jesus is a sacrament expressing the harmony within God, if that makes sense. So that what Jesus does is the same all the time, that is revealing the interior of God in an outward way. There's an outwardness to the interior of God, just as what you do, your gestures, what I do, these are all physical gestures that I'm doing, but they do express how I am. You know, when I frown, or I smile, or why do I clap, why do I whistle? Because the interior calls for it. We are inward, outward people, inside out. We live it all the time. So that Jesus is the sacrament of the mystery of God. The outwardness, while still remaining God, he is fully human. Then as a sacrament of the healthy God, then all his gestures are healthy, are a revelation of who he is. And he is not always judge saying yes or no. I've not come to condemn the world. I've come to save it. I've come to bring it back to itself, the interior of God, the other face of mercy, or the other face of love. It's what you say about yourself is pretty healthy. You did something wrong and you feel bad. And you feel bad about yourself, not just what you did. Jesus is the other side of that, saying, my health wants to meet your health. I say it is healthy to feel guilty. And it is healthy to be remorseful and all that. And maybe to cry at your state of sadness or to withdraw or go into depression. I think that's a healthy human response. So that God's health meets our health. God's person, God's way meets our way. And that's what's unusual. Because in former religions, other religions, you did have to do something actively. You had to sacrifice virgin girls or sheep or fruits of the field or something, and then you did something and then you feel better and you assume that God feels better towards you because you've done something sacrificial. The unusual thing about Christianity is that state of peacefulness that we would like to attain by doing something, okay, push-ups or lashing ourselves or denying ourselves or fasting or whatever, that state we would like to get to by our efforts, that state is already there because of the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. That's our central belief, that we are already there. We have to have the humility to receive what is very difficult to understand, and that's why we tend to deny it or walk away from it. It's too humbling. It's too real. It's too humiliating to be given that which we would rather achieve by ourselves. So it's God's invitation to accept the poverty of what we can't do and the humility to receive what he gives us. But what he gives us in forgiving is healing. It's for where are you going next? What are you going to do next? How are you going to be a sacrament, so that all the sacraments in the Catholic Church are mission experiences. Let me say that again. That's so important and so misunderstood. I have no idea why it's not emphasized more. But, you know, people will say to me, when I ask them, are you Catholic? See, I go to church. I said, no. You're not a Catholic by going to church. You're a Catholic by how you get sent by church. How you get, go in peace to love and serve the Lord. Glorify God with your life. Go, the Mass is not ended. It's already extended. That's what they, go in peace, the Mass is extended. Through how you live, you are meant to be a sacrament. This is not crazy Jesuit stuff. This is Catholic. And some people think that that can't go together, Jesuit and Catholic, but it is. And it's all about what are you going to do with what you've received. It's that simple. If you've received healing in this sacrament, that sacrament, marriage, baptism, it's all about healing. Healing to be not who you would be by nature, but who you are by grace. Okay, now that's big stuff. And so we have the sacrament of reconciliation. I say it's a sacrament of reorientation. It's redirecting me away from myself, away from my inability to comprehend what mercy is. And I receive it humbly and the mission proudly, that I am sent and meant to be a blessing. Imagine that. I am meant to be a blessing. I am healed to be a blessing. I am not forgiven as a judicial thing. I am blessed as a relational thing. Mercy is relational. Healing is relational. Judgment, if you want to put it in medical terms, the doctor does a diagnosis and does a healing for the purpose of continuing the living. Of course. Now go, get out of here. But it's not to continue to injure yourself so you'll come back here. It's what are you going to do with the healing you've received? That's mission. And that's what all the sacraments are about. Marriage. We marry each other for the purpose of being more for others than just ourselves. That's a wonderful sacrament. We married people keep encouraging each other to go and be a blessing. My love for you should make you even more a blessing. It's a constant sacrament of mission. Now, something to pray with. Luke 7:36. Now there are many, many sacramental passages where Jesus heals, whatever. But this is actually a couple things. One is, it's a semi-religious experience. Simon the Pharisee has called him to the table where other Pharisees are gathered. And they have their religious rituals, and they don't do them at all in this story with Jesus. And he calls that to their attention. Because in the midst of their observing him while not observing their rules, Jesus violates their religious tradition by allowing a woman, never in the Jewish context, a woman to come and whom they know as a sinful woman, and she touches his feet. That's against all religious traditions. And he knows who she is, and he forgives her. And she allows it. She allows him to relieve her. And he says, now, don't just stay here and wash my feet. He says to her, you go. It's always a going. It's always a mission. It's always ascending. So there are other texts in similar Luke 19. You could pray with that. Obviously, the great story of the Good Samaritan in Luke 15, but John 8, Jesus is always dealing with those who do not deserve. They have done nothing except violate their own religious identity, their own personhood. Preparing for the sacrament of reorientation, where we get redirected towards living the Eucharist, towards living as a blessing, preparing can take us backwards quite a bit. I did this, I did that, I thought this, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, I got a whole list of the past, which is okay. But the future is more important. And if you really want to prepare for the sacrament of reorientation, how about this for a prayer? Pray with, where are you going with this sacrament? Where is the grace of the sacrament sending you to what is your future as a healed person, as a missioned person? So to pray more with the mission of your life rather than the unmissioned part, where you is all about you and what was in it for you. Now you can see, I hope, why I would say that many people do not want to experience forgiveness and do not want to experience the sacrament of reorientation because it's hard to understand. And things that we don't understand, we tend to put aside. We'll think about it later, or it really isn't anything. Mercy is everything, but it's not just forgiveness. That's all I'm saying. And that mercy is not about the past exclusively. This is what, let me bring you up to date. This is what how I have been a schmuck, and this is how I have been resistant, and blah, blah, blah. No, the sacrament has much to, all the sacraments have to do with your history leading to your future. You come to the Eucharist. You come to the sacrament of marriage with mutual histories. The sacrament embraces the history. All the sacraments embrace time. All the sacraments embrace how have you come to this sacrament? Sacrament of the sick. There's a history there. And the grace of that sacrament is to continue living that history into the mystery of your future. Yes. It's all about time. But this sacrament seems to have developed into an historical review that has nothing to do with the future. That is crazy. All the sacraments have to do more with the future. And the only thing that is substantial about the past is the redemptive life, death, and resurrection of Jesus that allows for us to have a future, you see. Allows us to have a future. Well, yes, we have to. We come with something of our history. But my interest in this sacrament is, where am I going with this grace? And the same with the Eucharist. To whom am I being sent? Go in peace. And when I say, to whom am I being sent today, this week, this month? Where am I going with the grace of God? That's what's important about the sacrament. And come to confession, that's fine. And say, yeah, I did this, I did that. Fine, that's your past. Do you have any idea about the grace that you want to pray with towards the future? I could say it over and over again, but it's the same thing. Jesus is more interested in us in having life and having it to the full, that my joy may be complete in you. That you bring, I mean, this is in John's Gospel so much in the last discourse, especially in John 14 and 15. It's all about fruitfulness. It's all about fruitfulness. Everything in Jesus is about the future. So little about the past. And that's why I say the only important reality about our past is our accepting of Jesus as the one who got us to the place where we would like to go by our own efforts. So we prepare for the sacrament of reconciliation by being simply receptive, both to the truth of our past and the power of our future. And we pray with that.